to rot! It's an...
Articulate Warbling. Hosted by Zach Ferguson. Edited and produced at Badger's Drift Studio. If you enjoyed this podcast, please contact us at pgttcm.com so we can make more. And here he is, Zach.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I wish to start today's episode on a different note. The previous two episodes I've been rather positive about the pieces of art I've chosen. So far I've spoken about H.A.P.P.Y. by Nicola Barker, Glass by M. Night Shyamalan, Bob Honey, Who Just Do Stuff by Sean Penn, and Joker by Todd Phillips. Now today I wish to talk to you about one book I've read this year that I utterly detest, I hate, and also a movie that really did not connect with me. First of all, I shall be talking about Kari Mora. So, Thomas Harris was once lauded as one of the greatest American novelists of his generation. I mean, of course he was. If you've read his earlier work, where the world was first introduced to one of our most famous famous fictional masters of manipulation. You know, this character inlaid with a masterful set of culinary skills. The cannibal serial killer artiste that is Hannibal Lecter. Who could deny this? It was intense, well-researched, introduced in a really almost oddly complex, though charming character, as if now so world-renowned, purely for its iconography, garnered by many variants of actors, most recently Mads Mikkelsen, and also different filmmakers handling, and different creators putting them on screens, both silver and small and golden. But I feel after 13 years since his last dip into the thriller come horror come complex psychological world he had created with Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal, Thomas Harris, he gives this rather atrocious read. It's truly an awful fucking read. Fast-paced reads usually work, but not when the read is so fast and vapid in its execution that it speeds past any form of character development and the narrative. It's just trying and trying and failing, then trying again to set up something that passes you by in a blur. It's fast-paced because it's lazily written. There is no mean feat in achieving a rapidness in a novel, but this takes the utter biscuit. No, it takes the piss. First of all, this book is boring. Not only that, it's amateurish beyond comparison and absolutely shocking considering the masterful displays of ingenuity and pace and the depths usually ushered onto his first few releases. What is Harris doing? Obviously, he needed the money. It's probably only been hitting shelves due to commercial success of his name and sadly more renowned brand being the creator of Hannibal himself, the Thomas Harris. This book shouldn't have been released nor deserves its obvious financial success, which is raking it in, but due to negative feedback, the book's on sale for so cheap now because nobody wants it. There's so many people have got hold of it. It's such a detestable novel that I think anyone, as soon as they're reading it, they're like, I don't even want to hand this to somebody. I don't want to put them through the pain. I did this to my grandmother and she usually reads a load of shit. But she came away going, it was alright, it was normal. And I was like, no, be honest, what did you think? She was like, it was crap. You know, this financial success, it's almost, you shouldn't be rewarding a has-been, and that may seem severe, extreme, but as it only encourages them to continue crafting daft senselessness as renowned creators. This book, it's devoid, and everything else summated and surrounding it is devoid. This book lacks any real character or characters and any real purpose. Any actual engaging plot, it's fairly centred just around the run-of-the-mill Pablo Escobar wannabes and cast-offs and want of that of which he's left over, fueled by the success of other creators and their tackling of this subject matter, such as the popularity with Narcos, the television series shown on Netflix. This novel is laughable. It's a hodgepodge amalgam of lazily written pieces of prose that doesn't stylistically or aesthetically within the parameters of the book cohere or work together. It's fast, rapid, yet jumbled. It's just a perfect example of a complacent artist doing it for money to to capitalise on his slowly fading brand name. It may seem like a good project for himself to get the old gears going again, but not for publication. I mean, Harris has been living most of his life now off of the success of Hannibal as a character and an emblem of certain times. When he is reintroduced to a certain audience and generation of viewers, rather than readers, of course the name Thomas Harris is synonymous with it. And, you know, built up in that anacostasical whimsy. And I don't blame him. But what a lightning in a bottle effect. Few books, then a sudden world-renowned success in creating a character, rather than the actual brilliant book said character comes from. You see total financial security, one so many authors dream of achieving. Sadly, Harris is known for the creation and not his art. The Silence of the Lambs is a fucking powerful novel. It's just so... it had that rapidity and that pace and that thriller-esque capacity whilst being quite fueled with depth and dimensionality. Thomas has fallen into the easy throes of benefiting than continually testing and building himself as an artist and a writer. This book is just a sum of all its parts. A lot of people have been disheartened by Harris's latest venture into the world of Hannibal Lecter. Hannibal Rising was sneered at and condescended upon, but there was still a lick of hopefuls that maybe, just maybe, the sincerity and want to have a great encapsulating story was still there and within his grasp. Sadly, I've got to end this with, sadly, this is not the case. Don't bother. 1 star out of 5. Truly an awful experience.
Hey everyone, welcome back. This is me, DB Spitzer, the editor and producer of... Just wanted to let you know that we're hoping to make this a full-time series and not just a backdoor pilot. So if you would like to help sponsor the show, or if you have anything that you'd be like wanting to donate to help the show keep going, let us know. PGTTCM.com. And where you can reach Zach is in the show notes, and also where you can buy his many books. Zach Ferguson, and you can check him out, of course, on Amazon.com, where he's got all kinds of wonderful books, from Dimension Whores to What Mr. Wants, Mr. Gets. All right, back to Zach.
Now, on to Quentin Tarantino's 9th release, which is a load of old bollocks. Kill Bill was released twice, and you can't just scrub out Death Proof from history. Also, you contributed to 4 rooms, and if you contribute directorial credits, you are a guest director on Sin City. So, you know, you can't rewrite history. But then again, Quentin Tarantino can, and he has, perfectly, with such films as Inglourious Basterds, which is inglorious. There is no mean feat when it comes to making a movie. But when it's Quentin Tarantino, you just know there's a certain caliber. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's a sum of all its parts. Quentin Tarantino has been notorious for weighing in quite heavily on the homages, the cultish, niche side of cinema. He's got encyclopedic knowledge upon certain films that, you know, one wouldn't expect. You know, Grindhouse, foreign cinema. But the sum of all these parts, what he's done perfectly with his recent releases, even his early career, is he personifies them and creates them with his punchy dialogue, his engaging character work, his unique sensibilities, his record drop music, his decisions, his execution. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is not a good movie. It is a vignette, though he's made movies where there's a lot of vignettes, a lot of sequences interweaved by character engagements. The last few films he's made have been driven by plot and characters in particular. And because he wears his homages and love so thickly on his sleeve that it spreads and becomes just a full trench coat, this movie is meant to be a love letter to the era of some of his favourite films, thereby wherein they were made. Centred around the death of Sharon Tate, or is it? Centred upon the relationship between out-of-work stuntman and slowly fizzling out work, Dick Dalton. Cliff Booth, the stuntman, played by Brad Pitt, and Leonardo DiCaprio really elevating this film beyond your book standard movie. And that's saying something when it comes to Quentin Tarantino. Leonardo DiCaprio is Dalton Dickey, a man who was once in his prime, then going to do westerns on television, now being doled out, sold to different studios, lent out, but finding a real niche within a certain area of westerns. A man so embroiled in himself, so egotistical, so lost, so incapacitated by this great talent he has, but this real dislocation and self-loathing, thinking that he's losing it. The film centres on cults, but it really doesn't. It centres on making movies, it really doesn't. It centred on Quentin Tarantino doing the best of what he can do, it really doesn't. This feels lazy. This feels like a script that was pulled from under a pile of probably much chunkier and heavier scripts, blown off and gone, okay, how much can I sell this? This is Quentin Tarantino's biggest budgeted movie. He's now with Columbia Pictures ever since the Weinstein whole fucking debacle when he lost them. Then Uma Thurman came out and said she nearly died because he forced her. Look, controversy has always surrounded Quentin Tarantino. Whether he's shutting people's butts down in interviews or he's just being obnoxious. And the guy's a hyperactive dickhead in a lot of great ways. But he's also up himself. He also is always of the belief he's the cleverest man in the room. He knows more than you. And in particular when it comes to cinema. Well, this film exemplifies that this is not the fucking case. This film is hollow. Though with great performances by DiCaprio and some real audacious moments that come by the end, but it's too late. For a film that's nearly 3 hours long and we just get a final hurrah and the pure QT aesthetic and texture in the last 5 minutes, it's not worth it. The film doesn't feel like a homage, it doesn't feel like a love letter, it just feels like a sequence of events that just are showpieces, but not strengthened showpieces. There's a vignette, but the only backbone to it is the inevitable death and murder of Sharon Tate by the hands of the Manson cult murderers. The film is weak. It's senseless. It's hollow. It's not even filmed. It's not even got its thumbprint. Quentin Tarantino is notorious for sequences where he allows characters to jump off each other and to play, and it's just held there. Or there's a few cuts where we see either a two shot or a close up shot. Long, compelling dialogue sequences. But this is just secluded between stares or grunts between Cliff Booth, Brad Pitt, and Dalton, who is Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, I keep pausing because I don't think I can really summate much to do with this film. So this episode may be shorter than the rest because there's not much I can really gravitate towards or see. There is nothing there. Rick Dalton is such a compelling character, but that is not enough. It is not enough. When the sequences play out and DiCaprio is on a plateau like none other, it still hasn't got a backbone. Grunts and exchanges. There's an arduous, prolonged, so-called cameo of Al Pacino playing an erudite producer. It's not a cameo. It's a sequence that goes on far too long. Also, when the film does show some shine, where it does play with history, in particular Bruce Lee's inclusion and Cliff Booth having a fight with him, you think, yes, that's more like it. And then it just cuts back and there's monotony. A monotony of silences. Is this Quentin Tarantino reining it in? Is he honing it in? Is it a maturation? Is that kineticness and hyperactivity that's so evidential in himself not translating into this film and its DNA because he wants to be assumed as being mature? I don't believe that. Because in interviews and public marketing press pieces, he seems to be of the belief this is his greatest film and the sum of many all parts, but everything he's influenced by, he's redefined. There's no semblance of love here. This feels like just something that he scurried and put together so he could sell it on for the highest bidder, get a movie out. And, you know, the movies are sold purely up on his name. I think if this movie wasn't Quentin Tarantino, no one would forgive it for its trespasses against decency in cinema. It may look in certain sequences, it may have a nice edit, but overall, this film is just fucking boring. Boring and presumptuous and so far up its own arse, but there's no validity behind it. There's no stylistic or nuanced decisions. Again, it's built up of smaller parts that shine bright, but it does not hold it up enough to elevate it to be considered one of the greatest films of the year, let alone of Quentin Tarantino's career. I mean, for fuck's sake. The last three films he's made have been gems. Masterful, brutal, violent, relevant, full of subliminal messages, not just about cinema, but about history. Making amends to history in such a way that Quentin Tarantino can only do. So what the fuck is he doing here? I do like the idea of Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate playing an almost ethereal ghost of Sharon Tate. Almost a memory, a homage to her existence, the thing that could have been, without going into spoiler territory. Respecting her legacy. Fair dues. But there's not enough length or weight or real proper engagement with her character and her place. All she is like a quirky, klutzy actress, and that's all she's seen as. And this poor woman, whilst pregnant with Roman Polanski's child who was murdered, there's no denying that that is something that everyone would hope, even if she wasn't famous or a known name, would hope would be wiped out of history. What an appalling fucking crime. But the nature doesn't come across as insensitive, it comes as overtly sensitive, and it's not something you really anticipate from Quentin Tarantino, and it's not saying I want to see the death of Sharon Tate, but I want a little bit more of Sharon Tate, for us to have an engagement with her as a character or as a reincarnation of her, for us to really engage with her and then actually have that sigh of relief when the ending does come and you go, ah, I understand why he made the decisions he does. There's not much weight behind the decisions he makes. There's not enough screen time for Robbie to validate that. Even if you wanted to keep the ghost-like memory homage on the fringes of your subconscious type thing, where she's there and it's just like, but it just, there's not enough emotion behind it. We don't know much about her except she likes dancing, she's kooky, she can sneak into a cinema because she claims that she's in the movie, which she is. It's very hollow. And though Quentin Tarantino is often accused of being quite an emotionless director and writer, I don't believe that. But I feel this is his most hollow, whilst trying to convey in a disingenuous way that it's an emotional piece of cinema. It's a love letter. It's the sum of all things. And this is the point his career's led to. Yes, on a very cosmetic side of things, it looks like that. But overall, it really fucking isn't. And I really did not enjoy it. And having mulled over it, it's not an entertaining film. And it's not valid in its length and in its uproarious appraisals and plaudits. So I've got to give this 2 stars out of 5. I really didn't like it. I really didn't engage with it. I really couldn't quite compute the decisions he makes. I couldn't really quite compute why he decided, out of all the material that he probably has, why this would be a good one to follow up, to be his penultimate finale, but now being perceived or claimed to be his final QT movie. I just don't know anymore. But what I tell you is, if this is his penultimate, let's hope his fucking finale blows this out of the water. Because if history needs to be rewritten, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood needs to be written out of my fucking memory. And of the memory. And of the tapestry of recent releases. 2 stars for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I do apologise that this has been a negative and quite abrupt, and maybe abrasive short-clipped episode. But I don't want to dwell on things that, you know, may have place for argument and have place for contemplation, but when it comes to the negative, I don't have all that much to say, or accept that this is not good. Thank you for joining me for this episode of It's Not a Rant, It's Articulate Warbling. I'm Zach Ferguson. I wish to thank DB Spitzer, my producer, editor, an all-round good egg, and I hope you have a good evening, morning, and I'll see you next time.
It's Not a Rant, it's Articulate Warbling with Zach Ferguson. Written by Zach Ferguson, produced and edited by DB Spitzer, recorded at Badger's Drift Studios in glorious Portland, Oregon. Zach's part is, of course, recorded in Brighton, England. Want to help the show? Go to pggtcm.com. Check out what we've got. Go to Zach's shop in the show notes. Go to Zach's Instagram in the show notes. Find out how to help him out. And of course, Ashton Manor, Darkest Child by Kevin MacLeod. So, thank you so much, and join us next time.